The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Tuesday. It's St. Patrick's Day. For all of you Irish-type people out there listening, I have a lovely Irish lass for a wife. Her name is Claire, and she plays Irish harp. And so we definitely were wearing the green, if you're watching through the webcam. And we're doing our little celebration. And I know probably it strikes a lot of people as odd that Hawaii would get a big celebration going for St. Patrick's Day, but we do. Downtown Honolulu is going to be blocked off tonight, and O'Toole's and Murphy's, they're having a street fair, and it's just going to be a wild old time out there, and I hope you're having an equivalent celebration where you are. Anyway, getting on to the news and stuff here today, Matt is in our control room, twiddling the dials and answering the phones, and if you want to join us on the air for today's show, it's 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we're going to start off talking about the Dow Industrials average. Now, it had another really, really good day. It ended up, it started in the morning kind of up and down on either side of the line, green, you know, red, green, green, red, back and forth. And then finally it took off and ran up to plus 178. And the financial news reporters are saying, well, this is a trend starting, you know, a week ago. The market has been going up and going up and going up, and it's, you know, happy days are here again. And everything is sweetness and light in the galaxy. And I hope they are correct. I would love for this economy to reignite. We all need customers. We all need clients. We all need to have our high-paying jobs come back to us. I'm not seeing any of that. And so I'm wondering what explanation we have for the Dow to be doing what it's doing. And I remember, of course, that back during the Clinton administration, many of whose advisors and officials now decorate the Obama administration, there was some deliberate tinkering with the stock market to run it up to really high numbers in order to wave it as a political banner. And right now there's no question that Barack Obama needs something he can point to as an indicator that he's got the economic situation in hand, because he's starting to get more and more criticism, even from Democrats, that everything he does seems tailored toward looting the ordinary working people to give the money to the rich, and he's not doing anything consistent with the long-term recovery of the U.S. economy. He's not doing anything to bring back the high-paying manufacturing jobs on which this nation was built. Yeah, he's going to, you know, hand out some minimum wage jobs to fill in the potholes with shovels, but no college graduate wants to be doing that after they've gone deeply into debt on student loans learning how to be an IT engineer. And so looking at the actual charts, going past the actual number, looking deep in the charts, I noticed almost immediately that the trading during the stock market day today, and it's actually been a pattern for going back at least a week, there's a huge number of buys at the opening bell, and then volume just drops to almost nothing for most of the day, and then there's a lot more volume activity just before the closing bell. And so what I'm seeing here, and unfortunately the charts don't tell you whether the volume is buying or selling, but it looks like there's a lot of traffic right at the opening bell that may set the stage for the day, and then at the end of the day, whoever's made a killing on whatever stocks is cashing out. And somebody in the chat room is saying, what's the PPT? The PPT stands for Plunge Protection Team. And this is the name for a group of financial manipulators who are legally allowed to play market manipulation games, which would get anybody else thrown in jail. And they became known over time. People began to realize that the government was intervening in the markets to prevent a serious sudden decline. Unfortunately, once you've established that capability, the temptation is there to run the market up in order to use it as a political banner, and we've been seeing a lot of that. So the volume, the behavior of the volume during the day seems out of whack with this steady increasing decline. So when you go in and you look at the individual stocks to see which ones are actually increasing and which ones are not, and you find out that most of this upward movement is confined to the indicator stocks, the Dow Industrial Averages is not a measure of the entire stock market. They only have a small selected group of stocks that they look at from which they derive their numbers. And a large percentage of the indicator issues are from these companies that are getting these huge bailouts of taxpayer money. So, of course, they're looking good. You know, they've got money coming into their companies. They don't even have to give anything back for it. So, yeah, their stock is going to go up. So the bailouts are setting the trend for the stock market. I mean, if you were to walk down to any publicly traded company and just hand them a few billion dollars out of your own pocket, yeah, the next day their stock is going to go up. It doesn't mean the company is earning any more money. They just have more cash on hand that affects their balance sheet for assets versus liabilities. And so they're looking good. And as we pointed out a week ago, Bernanke was talking to the Council on Foreign Relations and dropped a hint that the U.S. government would turn a blind eye to any corporations going back to the mark-to-market accounting method, which allowed Enron to so overstate their value and run their stocks up, leading ultimately towards a huge crash that not only took out Enron, but took out Arthur Andersen's accounting firm that was playing little games with them. Now, this kind of brings me to another story on the same topic, because we're starting to find out that the big three rating agencies that people go to say, how much is this stock or this corporation or this government really worth? How reliable are they? And we're talking S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. Outside examination has discovered they've been keeping companies' credit ratings high, even though they should have been downgraded because of inadequate capital, overstated assets, overexposure to the derivatives, that's the big problem, and other risky investments. So these ratings agencies, instead of being an objective indicator of what's going on with these companies, they just joined up with them and said, you know, little band of brothers, we're going to invest in derivatives, and our little good buddies over here at the rating agencies are going to say, well, they're still credit worthy, and go ahead and give them money. And it's this band of brothers, and they're all teamed up to defraud ordinary investing Americans. Nobody's watching the watchers. I mean, we now know the Securities and Exchange Commission, who make their money directly from the U.S. taxpayers, were turning a blind eye to what Bernie Madoff was doing. So we're beginning to reach this point where it looks like the entire Wall Street financial system is completely crooked. It's all pyramid schemes. It's all overstated assets. It's all funny bookkeeping. Because here's the bottom line. The stock market is supposed to be about value. You're buying a stock that will pay you dividends because the company whose stock you now own makes a product that somebody wants to buy. And what we're seeing is stocks are being traded like they're gambling chips. They're being manipulated. They're being promoted. We're seeing bump and dumps. And we're seeing pyramid schemes to create the illusion of profits, and bookkeeping tricks like mark-to-market to create the illusion of profits. It isn't really there. And for this reason, because of the amount of fraud and chicanery we're seeing, I am not convinced the market has turned around. I'm not convinced we haven't seen the bottom. This may just be a temporary respite. This may just be a glorious bump and dump. A week-long, two-week-long bump and dump. They're going to sucker everybody back in to buying more stock, and then it'll drop again. So, you know, I wouldn't be in the stock market at this particular point in time, even if I had risk capital, which I don't. And if you don't have risk capital, you need to be out of the market anyway. I know these day trading companies, like, you know, the online trading companies, they're trying to sell trading as a fashion accessory. Hey, look how hip I am. I'm buying stock in China over my laptop. And they don't even talk about risk capital or what you might be earning. It's just to sell the action. The action. I've got four computer screens, and I've got the action going, and I'm watching all of this stuff. And the bottom line is, you should not be in the stock market unless you have at least 6 months of your own income already in the bank. That's your risk capital. Shouldn't be playing with your rent money. Shouldn't be playing with your food money. This is a very dangerous time still, no matter what the Dow has done this last week. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231. Call in. Matt's waiting to hear from you.
Are Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And Aloha America. Yeah, a lot of people singing that song right now. Cannot make it here anymore. We're certainly seeing it around here. I want to get back to economy for one more area, and that's talking about AIG. They're making a really big deal about this issue over the bonuses and why these executives who failed are getting the tax money. We're seeing Barack Obama and his people kind of basically taking this attitude of, well, they've got contracts, and we're a nation of laws, and we can't go in and tell them not to... not to fulfill the contracts. And actually, that's not true, because if the U.S. government is handing our taxpayer dollars to AIG and they say you may not use this to, you know, pay executive bonuses, or you only get this money if you agree, you know, if your executives agree to void that part of the contract, I'm sure they do it. And I think the reason that Barack Obama is not pushing on this issue very hard is because during his run for the presidency, AIG was a major donor to Barack Obama to the tune of over $100,000. And that kind of money will buy you a lot of grace from the White House. Now, getting back to AIG itself, however, all this focus on the bonuses, I think it's a distraction. Yes, it's annoying the executives are getting billions of dollars of our tax dollars, or millions of dollars of our tax money. But I think it's being bandied about in the media because it's a distraction, because where the majority of the money is going to AIG is payouts to the counterparties on these derivatives contracts. They're trying to unwind all the derivatives, and they're using our money to do it. Now, for those of us who subscribe to the theory of evolution, it's really very simple. Life forms that are very much in tune with their environment and smart about survival will survive. And those life forms that do really stupid things, Darwin Award winners, will remove their genes from the gene pool. Unfortunately, what we have here right now are companies that made very bad choices. Executives made very bad choices. And as a result, they should go out of business. And I feel bad for the stockholders who invested in the companies, but they needed to be doing due diligence to find out what these companies were really up to with the money. And these companies should be allowed to collapse and go away and make room for something better and smarter and more capable to evolve. I was saying the same thing about the automakers. If they can't make a car anybody can afford to buy and wants to buy, then they should go out of business, whether they're Ford or Chrysler or GM. Just because they've been around for a very, very long time is no reason to prop them up. I mean, when Edison invented the electric light bulb, was there a taxpayer bailout for the coal oil lamp manufacturers or the candle makers? I don't think so. So we're here looking at these companies like AIG. They made bad decisions getting into these derivatives. The executives who made those choices are getting bonuses. And the taxpayers are getting stuck with the losses. And it's still far from certain if AIG can get all the way out on these derivatives payouts. All right. So that's our situation with AIG. Now, another story I wanted to move on to. Today is the last day that the Seattle Post-Intelligencer is printing a paper newspaper. They're shutting it all down. The presses are being torn down. They're going to leave the trees alone for the newsprint. And they are going to confine themselves solely to an online presence. And I understand that people who work in the traditional media, they're very unhappy when they lose their jobs. And jobs are hard to come by right now. But I don't have much sympathy for the corporate media when they're losing their business and they say, well, we're going to go on the web because that's where all the money is. And I don't think it's, they'll probably survive because being on the web costs a lot less than putting out a paper newspaper. But it isn't the paper and it isn't the internet that was the reason these companies got into trouble. It is that the American media consuming public realizes that the Washington Post, the New York Times, and yes, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and all these other newspapers that have gone out of business. People stopped reading them because they recognized that these newspapers were putting out government propaganda instead of news. These media organizations were not giving people what they needed to know, only what the government wanted them to think. And once people had an alternative, as in the alternative media and the blogosphere, they turned to it to find out what's really going on. And one of the reasons I avoid using the phrase mainstream media, I mean, I'll slip up every once in a while and say it because of long years of habit, but the corporate media isn't mainstream anymore. The mainstream is shifting right before our eyes. And it's shifting away from these huge mega corporations that tried to own it all and control it all. And the mainstream of American political dialogue is shifting back to these hundreds and hundreds of little tiny Part 15 radio stations and thousands of blogs and all these little independent voices. That is the way media was originally supposed to be and was encouraged in the United States of America. Because if you have a diversity of voices, then you have a diversity of opinion and a diversity of information from which the discerning citizen can pick and choose. And that's the way it's supposed to be. We were never supposed to be a country with a few people dominating everything that you see, hear, and read. And so my sympathies to the people who worked for the paper edition of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. But I think we need to look at their decline and demise as a very positive sign in that the monopolistic control over what America has been thinking is clearly, clearly on the wane here. So we'll be hearing, I'm sure, about more newspapers going out of business. Today is the anniversary, it's a very tragic anniversary, of the murder of Rachel Corrie, who was a protester, an activist in Gaza, protesting the illegal demolition of Palestinian homes on Palestinian land by Israel, building this basically Israel's version of the Iron Curtain in defiance of UN resolutions, the international courts, basically Israel doing what Israel does all the time. Rachel Corrie put herself in danger and was run over, as I understand it, twice, by an Israeli bulldozer who ran her down and then backed over her to make sure she wasn't going to get up again, and sadly she did not. Today's the 6th anniversary. So, as we move right along here, and let's see, I'm reading our little chat room again. Okay, a lot of stuff going on in the chat room. If you're a member, please log in and check it out. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break here. Please call in and join us on the air, 800-259-9231, especially if you're Irish. Call in and talk about St. Patrick's Day. Matt is in the control room, ready to answer the phones, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I'm going to spend this segment, actually, no, I'm not. I'm watching. Matt is telling me we have a caller on the line. We're going to go to Chris in Florida. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to know what kind of companies, if you or some callers could tell me, what kind of lenders are calling in their mortgages, because I just found out that today my landlord is being foreclosed on. His note is being called in. He did not inform me. I can understand why. But, of course, now I have to go to the hearing in order to explain to the judge that if I haven't had enough time to find a new residence by April 8th, I will let the judge know that I wasn't able to find a new residence, and hopefully he'll hear my pleas for prolonging the sale of the property. But, you know, here I just got the notice, and it says that the GMAC mortgage is calling in the mortgage, so you know they wanted all the total indebtedness paid on in full, and I would just like to know more about this. And it's just, you know, even this incident today, even though I wasn't planning to copy the documentary, the Obama Deception, until Alex puts out his 1.5, I'm going to do that now, because I'm just so PO'd about the whole fact that, he's, you know, he lets the bankers, in their bailout, you know, rat on themselves in any future possible potential bailouts. And, you know, of course, they're not going to rat on themselves. So I wanted to know, if anybody could rat on the ones that are calling in the most mortgages.
Well, I am so sorry to hear that that is happening to you. We're hearing it from a lot of places. The reality is, if you look at the fine print on your mortgage, the mortgage company can call it in at their discretion at any time for any one of a number of reasons. I think it's very short-sighted, because what's going to happen is they're going to have a lot of people who obviously are not in a position to pay off the entire note at that time. This means more forced foreclosures, more forced bankruptcies, more write-downs on the real estate. And, again, it shows that the whole approach to fixing the economy by the U.S. government is completely backwards, because if they had taken this same $11 trillion and just given it to the American people, would have worked out to about $40,000 per person, we could pay our mortgages, and that would end the real estate crisis. We could pay our credit cards. That would end the credit crisis. And, you know, we could go to the store and buy, you know, new clothes and a flat panel TV, and that would end the retail crisis. Everything they're doing is seems designed to just absolutely strangle the economy right now. And the really funny thing is, you know, I understand some of these credit card companies are calling in the cards and they're calling in the mortgages, but obviously that's not true about the whole industry. I mean, I just got the mail just before the show today. There were 4 solicitations to sell me new credit cards. I got one of these robocalls from a credit company on my phone today. You know, we have a new low interest, blah, 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 if you transfer your balance over. So somebody somewhere has got money to loan. It's just a few companies, and obviously GMAC, which is tied in with GM, they may be in a cash short position, and they're scrambling. My understanding, and you need to talk to your lawyer about this, my understanding is that there were some laws passed to protect tenants sitting on properties during the foreclosure process, that there are, in fact, some remedies for you to make sure that you're not out on the street, that that they'll find something for you. But you do need to get a lawyer working on your case on your behalf, and at least the Legal Aid Society.
Yeah, I have one in mind. Thanks so much. My duplex neighbor will appreciate that news also. And I know that Bloomberg reported that the so-called subprime mortgage crisis could have been solved with only, I think it was $100 billion, and out of all this money, we would have had the so-called subprime crisis solved. But, you know, I hear these people on the radio say that, oh, Ron Paul's theories won't work. Well, the one theory I know that would work would be prosecution of these bankers, because, you know, Obama and the last president, voted for immunity, and immunity from prosecution of those who are setting up their new world government. And that's where the crux of the matter, I think, lies. And it's just irritated me to the point that, I just want them, whoever's being paid to listen, want them to know that I am so pissed off that this is happening to me and my neighbor, and to see her reaction, it struck home so much that they don't know really who they've angered. And those who are being paid to listen need to understand that it really pays to listen to shows like yours and that you're speaking the truth, if they would just look into it. So I appreciate all your help.
Okay, well, listen, I hear the anger in your voice. I mean, wow. I mean, if I were in your situation, I don't know that I would even be that calm. I have a temper, and my wife, she's Irish, she has a temper too. I'd be going absolutely totally nutso right now. And this is a situation that's hitting a lot of people, where renters who have been paying their rent on time month after month after month, and they're completely unaware that their landlords have gotten into financial trouble, until all of a sudden the property's foreclosed on. And as I said, my understanding is there were some laws passed recently to protect the tenants in circumstances like this, because obviously the tenants are making the payments here. And, you know, in the current situation, maybe think a little bit outside the box, because, I mean, your rent is paying the mortgage payment anyway. Maybe you should think about talking to the bankruptcy court and saying, well, give me the property, let me take over the payments. And, or find somebody that says, this might be your time to turn this around and actually try and acquire the property for yourself.
Well, I've thought about certain options, and I'm going to take your advice and look into other options of buying it out or fighting the process of listening to Jim Percy on the Power Hour. I've gotten his contact information and plan to contact him, and I've read Cracking the Code, or I'm in the process of rereading it.
Mm-hmm.
So, just spreading the information is where I am going to focus more. After the priority of taking care of this immediate situation, I'm saying I'm so angry that I'm just going to have to copy more DVDs and call more talk shows and let them know exactly, if these talk show hosts who Freudian slip there, who just stick up for Bush, well, you call into them and you ask them, what's the difference between Obama and Bush? And they're forced to try to defend Obama when I just mentioned, there might be two or three degrees in the course change between the two, but there isn't anywhere near 180, which is the change we can deceive in, the change we were promised. And so I just know that explaining to people is the answer to show that it's the bankers on the top. It's the country, and that's who we all have to blame. I don't blame the states for breaking off, or localities from declaring their home rule and sovereignty to the degree that their constitutions allow. So, these kinds of efforts are in place, and I encourage everybody to get behind them before so many other efforts are available. So I appreciate you, and I really thank you for the advice.
Okay, well, I got two more for you, okay, because, you need to understand, just because the property is up for sale doesn't mean they're going to find a buyer anytime really quick. And the new buyer may be buying it as an investment property. And I had a very close friend of mine who went through this, where they were renting and the owner of the property was foreclosed on. And what they did is they stayed calm, they waited, they worked through their lawyer, they found out who was going to buy the property out of the foreclosure, and turned out they were buying it as an investment property. So they just said, you've got a renter already here. And they said, okay, fine. They signed a contract, didn't have to pack a single box. The only thing that changed was the address the check was sent to every month. So hold that open as a possibility.
Right. That actually happened to me, something similar, but the new owners asked me to leave, and they actually helped. This is 12 years ago. They actually helped pay me to move, when at the time I was unable to. They'd rather do that than foreclose.
All right.
So.
Chris, we got to let you go. We're out of time on this segment, but, good luck, man. Call back in and let us know how it turns out. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Last segment of our show today. And Chris in Florida, if you're still listening to the program, the chat room over at whatreallyhappened.com is just going nuts. They have so much empathy for what you're dealing with right now. And they're saying, yeah, he should be angry. And yes, absolutely, that is true. Because, you know, we're dealing here with somebody who is clearly an innocent victim in all this. And our society and our civilization and our economy is set up where the people at the top who are creating the mess are getting all the rewards. And those of us who just want to live our own lives and be left alone, we're getting to eat the, you can insert your own word there. Now, one more thing that Chris brought up, I had been planning on mentioning today, is Alex Jones' new documentary, The Obama Deception. It is available to view online. We have a link to it at the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. Now, Alex and I disagree over the issue of whether there is a grand unified plan for the subversion of the entire world that everybody in the upper levels of our society has agreed to work on versus my view, which is that there are a lot of people who imagine they're going to be the next ruler of the world and they're constantly at war with each other. But I think there are some things that we can absolutely, absolutely agree on is that Barack Obama has utterly failed to keep any of his promises that he campaigned on. He's done a few little token maneuvers, token gestures, to make it look like he's trying to keep his campaign promises. But absolutely, there's been no change. We are heading in the same dangerous direction that we were doing before. And yes, the economy is in terrible, terrible shape. The money is being sucked out of the general working class population. It is being drawn to the top, then turned around and used to control us and spy on us and basically direct our lives. And every time I hear the phrase, the New World Order, I keep thinking to myself, that's what Alexander the Great wanted. That's what Hitler wanted. That's what Napoleon wanted. And look what happened to the people who got caught in the path of all of these New World Orderists. And we're seeing the same thing all over again. And it, you know something? This has nothing to do with whether the world is going to be better or not under one rulership. It's ego and vanity. Every 50 to 100 years, the planet Earth gets cursed with a group of individuals who just think, I want to be able to say I ruled it all. And I don't care how many people have to die or be driven down to abject poverty so that I can put up a statue and say, yes, for this brief, glorious moment in the grand history of the planet Earth, I ruled it all. And it is. It's vanity. It's pyramid-building mentality. And a global government is actually a bad idea because for reasons I've gone into. And I'm not going to go into them for the rest of the show because I got something else I want to talk to. But, Chris, if you're still listening, drop me an email because I want to stay in touch with you. There's a lot of people in the chat room who are rooting for you. And I want to stay in touch and find out how this works out for you. So drop me an email at wrh@whatreallyhappened.com. Okay, we're running out of time. I did want to get onto this other story. And I normally don't do local kind news, but this is a story that I think has implications for the country as a whole and indeed the whole world. We have this super ferry here, and it's really very nice, or at least it seems to be from the outside. I have yet to actually set foot on it. Ever since its creation, it has been the subject of all these lawsuits and opposition, all supposedly coming from environmentalists. And for a while, this ferry was operating out to the island of Kauai, which is the next island after the west of us, and it was and has been operating over to the island of Maui. And there has been all this opposition that it didn't have the proper environmental impact, this and that, and it's been going back and forth. The ferry no longer goes to Kauai because they were worried it was going to ram the whales. And yesterday, the Hawaii State Supreme Court ruled that the ferry cannot operate while waiting for the environmental impact statement to be completed. And so the ferry has shut down again. Now, I have to tell you, I mean, I love the environment as much as anybody else, but I'm beginning to smell a huge, huge rat, because this ferry, when it was operating, had become an indispensable means for local people here in Hawaii to get to the other islands at a reasonable cost. You could basically drive onto the ferry with your car or small truck filled with whatever you do for a living, in my case, camera gear, and you go down to the other island, you drive off, and you go do your work. Or you just go have fun, and you've got your car and your own personal comforts with you. And this was a problem for the inter-island airlines, which charge a moderate amount of money to fly you from one island to the other. And, of course, for the rental car companies on the outer islands, it's a problem if people are arriving with their own vehicles. So there were two groups who did not want this ferry to succeed by, you know, by any stretch of, you know, by any definition. They just didn't want it there at all. And a lot of the money and funding for these so-called environmentalists to get hot and bothered on this issue seems to have come from sources that we're not allowed to know where it is. So I'll let you fill in the gaps there. But they're going on and on about how this ferry is a threat to the whales, and we're coming up on whale watch season, and so forth and so on. Folks, I don't remember the last time a ship actually hit a whale, because my understanding is whales are relatively smart creatures. And unless they've been hanging out where the Navy is testing that high-powered sonar, they can hear the ferry coming a long way off and get the heck out of the way. And, you know, I like the whales, you know, but if, you know, Darwin's law applies, if a whale is dumb enough to get in the way of an oncoming ship, you know, maybe it's better that they're taken out of the gene pool, and we will encourage the evolution of smarter whales. Now, the other issue is they're going on and on about the environmental impact of this ship. And it's a catamaran, and it's a very efficient hull design. We have other catamarans running around the ocean called the Navitec boats, and they're really quite wonderful little, very stable boats. And it's really important because due to the shape of the ocean floor between the island of Oahu and Maui, you get a lot of waves there, very heavy ocean-going waves. So these catamarans really ride it out rather well. So we've got other catamarans, and they don't seem to have a negative impact on the environment. The ferry, the super ferry, uses a lot less fuel than the airlines going overhead. So for those people who are worried about carbon emissions and global warming and greenhouse gases, the ferry hauls more people and cargo with less fuel than the airplanes. And the bottom line is, when you travel by air between the islands, you have to pack all of your stuff and check it in. You have to have the body cavity searches going through the airline gates. You have to have TSA drop your laptop and break it, and then fondle your wife when you're standing there steaming. And then you get to the other side, and you've got to rent a car, and you've got to load all your stuff back in. And by the time you're at your destination, you're exhausted because of all the additional work involved with swapping cars and going through the airline and all the rest of the security. So the ferry is incredibly convenient, and it's a time saver. And a lot of inter-island businesses had become dependent on it. And I've been to other archipelagos where these same ferries operate, including Tahiti. And somebody in the chat room is talking about the ferries in the Greek islands. Hawaii is one of the few archipelagos that doesn't already have a developed ferry system. There are ferries all over Sydney Harbor. I mean, this is not a new technology. These ships have been around for a while. It shouldn't be a big deal to find out about the environmental impact. And if you want to talk about environmental impact, I mean, we've got all these fishing boats out there that are just, you know, grabbing all the fish and taking them away to foreign markets, mostly Japan. You have the USS Greenville, which rammed and sank a Japanese fishing boat. You have the USS Port Royal that only a few weeks back grounded itself on a reef, gouging the heck out of it, and had to dump 5,000 gallons of raw sewage onto that reef before it could be pulled off. And nobody's talking about telling the U.S. Navy they can't run their ships through our pristine environmental water anymore. So frankly, this cover that this is about the environment is total USDA choice bovine excrement, because what's really at stake here is the Inter-Island Airlines and the car rental companies want to protect their profits. And the fact that the Super Ferry is useful to the ordinary working people of Hawaii is irrelevant to that point. And this same kind of a dodge of environmentalism is probably being used where you live as well. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, with more phone calls, the news. Until then, stay safe, be well. Aloha, America.